Do not fear. These words from our first reading in Isaiah, as well as lots of other places in the Bible, are repeated so many times. I like to say that when you hear these words, do not fear, do not be afraid, have no fear, fear not. There's lots of, you know, variations in the translations. When you hear these words, you can listen for some good news that is to follow. There's lots of good news in today's scriptures. In fact, I would like to, even today, just hearing the lessons and reading the lessons now, I want to preach a sermon about each of these four lessons, even the psalm. There's so much good stuff, but I'll try to limit it to just one sermon, and I'm going to focus mostly on our first lesson from Isaiah. Now, the good news here in Isaiah, as in the other readings, is about life. Isaiah's audience has been in exile in Babylon, their lives reduced to servitude, but God is about to set them free, to give them the opportunity to go home to Jerusalem, to the surrounding countryside, to rejoin their old families after a couple of generations away. God will bring forth waters in the wilderness and streams in the desert. Metaphorically, for a people who thirsted for freedom, their thirst will be quenched. Desert and drought were the common sort of meteorological worries of their time and place. Now, in our country, we have drought and fires, but we also have hurricanes and floods, and probably lots more. The point in Isaiah is not the water itself, but the life that the water brings to a place that was dying. Whatever God can do to bring life into a situation of death is what God wants to do, because God brings life from death. That's the Jesus story. I think you know that one, so I won't go too far into that now. God bringing life from death is Jesus' story, and it's also the promise God makes here in Isaiah. And not just life, not just bare survival, but full, flourishing life. That's why the blind will see and the deaf will hear, as we read. Now, a quick caveat about disability, to which I need to credit, I think Juliana Clausens was the scholar who alerted me to, or reminded me, I would say, to say these things. This caveat about disability, when Isaiah writes about the blind and the deaf and the lame, I guess we would say people with limited mobility now, we probably don't say lame anymore, that reflects the world that they lived in. Now, we talk about disability, we can talk about accessibility. You know, now we can create resources in Braille or use text to audio computer programs so that blind people can fully participate. For that matter, we can wear glasses. How many people in Isaiah's time were wearing glasses? I'm wearing contact lenses right now. Probably so are a lot of you. We can make the world more accessible, and we already do for people who can't see. We can make the world more accessible for people who can't hear or who have trouble hearing with sign language, hearing aids, closed captioning, just amplification at this point. The very technology we're using right now makes it so we can hear more easily. You can turn up the volume or turn it down, but please don't turn it down too far right now. We can offer wheelchairs and ramps and elevators and all kinds of other accessibility things for people who have limited mobility, which includes some of us. I mean, that's one of the troubles at our church building, is that it can be a challenge to use the ramps we have to get to where people want to be in our building. We can make our world, or at least our churches and even our homes and our public spaces, much, much more accessible for people than was ever even possible in Isaiah's time. It need not take a miracle in these days to include people with what we call disability. So that was my caveat about that. In Jesus' time, it basically took this miracle, and that's what God was promising. And in fact, that's what Jesus did in one of the stories today. So God promises to bring life and flourishing and freedom to God's people after decades of suffering. And also here I want to just mention into our James reading, and it's also tied into our psalm, part of this life and this flourishing is justice. James writes about how we should stop blaming the poor for our problems when it is the rich who oppress us. He says, don't show partiality to the rich just because they look good, just because they're powerful, just because they have what we want, just because we're jealous of them. But care for the poor in whom God has placed this faith, and question those who are rich and who flaunt it over us and who, what does it say, take us to court and blaspheme the name of God, participating in the idolatry of money and wealth and power. Economic justice and working for economic justice are core parts of our faith, according to James. And these are part of God's promise to bring life and flourishing. How can you flourish if you don't have enough money to eat? I mean, that's the way our world is built, in this economy of money. If you don't have money, how do we provide for people? Do we force people to fend for themselves or just let them suffer? I mean, we do. But should we? Is that, I mean, that's not what, certainly not what James wants. I don't think it's what Jesus wants either. And just one more little caveat before I get into the heart of this thing. While we're talking about life, I would say, inspired by the Syrophoenician woman whose daughter was suffering and who advocated for herself and who stood up to Jesus, really, in that story. I wish we had time to fully go into that story and all the implications of that. But if there's one sort of obvious take-home lesson from that story of the Syrophoenician woman and Jesus, it is to respect women, trust women, listen to women. And as such, talking about life, criminalizing healthcare and putting bounties on people's heads for providing and receiving healthcare is not, as they say, pro-life. That's just another thing. That's just another thing this week that we're dealing with in our country. So I would say my prayers and my money are with people in Texas and other places where childbearing bodies are being criminalized, as well as the people who are supporting them. So, okay. That's enough of that stuff for now. Now I want to get into the heart of what I want to talk about, which is the beginning of our lesson from Isaiah. We're going to talk about fear. Now lately, this is another more stuff going on in our country, some people in our country have been talking about fear in ways that I've found to be harmful. You maybe heard this thing where people refuse to wear masks, or they refuse to vaccinate, and then they accuse others who do wear masks and who do vaccinate and who do distance from things of, they're accused of living in fear. They say, don't be afraid of this virus. I'm not afraid. I'm going to go out and live my life the normal way I used to do. They're trying to shame those of us who take precautions against this deadly and debilitating virus. And the implication is that fear is bad, that fear is a weakness, that each individual person should overcome this weakness of fear by themselves. Now, we know that that's not the whole story of fear. That's not all of what fear is about. I mean, if you're being chased by a grizzly bear and you turn around and say, I will not live in fear, like, who benefits from that? The bear is going to get you. And, I mean, does the bear even benefit from that? I don't think bears really, you know, not really. It's not like a, that's not a huge win even for the bear. And it's certainly not for you or for any of humankind. And if you're living in a deadly pandemic, wouldn't you try to not get sick? And wouldn't you try to keep your neighbors from getting sick? In Bible study this week, we were talking about fear a little bit, and I started thinking about a healthy relationship with fear. How do we have a healthy relationship with fear? So let's say I go to a place and drink a bunch of whiskey, which is unrealistic because I never go places right now, but I do sometimes drink whiskey. So let's say I go to a place and I drink a bunch of whiskey, and I need to go home. Am I going to drive home? Well, that would be unsafe, right? And I think that I can characterize that as fear. I'm afraid of hurting myself. I'm afraid of hurting other people. I'm afraid of getting arrested, right? And probably losing my job or whatever, all the other implications of that. And so I don't do that. So I get a ride. So I make the healthy and the safe choice to protect myself, to protect others, to keep negative consequences for me and wasting people's money and everything else. Those fears protect me and they protect other people. That kind of fear serves the common good. And that's really the standard with fear. Is this a fear that keeps me safe, that keeps the people around me safe, and that keeps other people further from me safe? Now, when we think about fear, not always easy to do in the moment if we're like actively afraid of something, but with practice, we can get better at it. We can ask these questions. Does this fear protect me? Does it protect the people around me? Does it protect the people I don't know? Or does the fear protect me at the expense of other people? Or does this fear keep me from living a healthy and flourishing life? I mean, to use a throwback example to the early pandemic, hoarding toilet paper, I mean, that was a fear-based response. Is it fear that ultimately hurts other people much more than it helps anybody else? It helps me or anybody else. So like that's not a good fear to have. Or the fear of, you know, if I'm afraid to go outside at all ever in the pandemic, at some point that fear is going to hurt me. We have to find the balance of balancing fears and needs and caring for our neighbor and watching out for ourselves. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to do in these times. There's a certain amount of fear that is appropriate, that's going to keep us healthy and safe, and that's going to keep our neighbor healthy and safe. And there's also a time, if your neighbor is suffering, if your neighbor is sick, if your neighbor is hurting, that you go and help them. Sometimes you take that risk. How are you taking a risk without fear? How are you being brave without fear? This is what I tell, you know, my kids all the time now if they're scared of something. We talk about fear is healthy and appropriate sometimes. And also, so too is bravery. So too is stepping out to try something that might seem scary. And finding the balance, finding those times when pushing through those fears is appropriate is something that we do together. You know, my kids don't know how to do it on their own. I sometimes know how to do it. But mostly in terms of this pandemic, we want to listen to people who know. Listen to, you know, Tony Fauci and Mike Osterholm and Jan Malcolm and all these other people who are trying to tell us, who've dedicated their lives and their careers to keeping people safe and healthy as much as possible. There are resources out there. There are people who are trying to help, besides our own neighbors who are trying to help us. Because again, life is what this is all about. Healthy, flourishing life with justice. Free from oppression, free from the kind of fear that is warranted that's going to hurt somebody. Free to live and be our whole selves. That's the kind of life that God promises in Isaiah. It's the kind of life that is described so beautifully in our psalm today. It's the kind of life that the woman demands from Jesus. And that the deaf man and the other stories, friends, have faith in Jesus enough to bring him to be healed, to be cured by Jesus, to be brought to a fuller life in that time and place. And it is the life that James says we can offer to our neighbors when we live out our faith, when we do good for others, when we do the works of following Jesus and living out our faith and caring for our neighbor. This is the life that we can lead. Balancing and managing fear with hope, and with risk, and with courage. Because ultimately, it's all about loving God and loving our neighbor. What is the thing, whether it's living through, you know, following our fear or rejecting our fear and doing something different, what is the thing that helps us love our neighbor, that helps us care for our neighbor? That is the choice that we can make. And again, we can make this choice because God has been promising that God brings life from death, that God will be with us since forever, since long before Jesus even came along. God has been making these promises to us. And we can trust these promises and live as faithful people. Amen.